All right, my name is Pastor Kyle, and I am so glad you chose to join us this weekend. We here at West Middlebury Baptist Church, we have two big events every year. The first one, the most important one, of course, is Easter, right? That's our A number one. That is the week we spend the whole week celebrating. We go over the top, and it's awesome. But number two is this weekend, the big event. We literally named it the big event because after Easter, it is our biggest event because we are celebrating something awesome. And I'm going to talk about that right at the end of my sermon. But if you have not been with us here this weekend, you may not know that stuff has been going on all weekend long. Friday night, we had a campfire, a bonfire out there, and that was great. Good food, good fellowship. We just had a blast hanging out. Yesterday, we had a wheels and engines show in our parking lot where we got to see all kinds of cool cars, some of them from brands that I like, other ones from brands that have bow ties on them, and others. and there were prizes given out for that. But at noon yesterday, we had a cooking competition, a food competition. And at the end of that, we did not have an opportunity to hand out prizes or declare who won in our three different categories. So now I get to do that this morning, which is awesome. If you were here, it was a close call. I know that at very least dessert came down to one vote. But the appetizer winner, anyone want to guess? Pineapple salsa won. That is Steph Guarino. The main dish. Oh, yes, you can clap. Clapping is okay. Yeah. I'm hoping we're going to do a lot of that today. All right. The main course winner was the smoked venison goulash by Terry Miller. And then finally, our dessert there. It will be no surprise here. It was close, but no surprise. It was the cream puff cake by Mary Canterbury. I believe it beat out the chocolate cake by one vote. So, all right. The other big announcement I have today is what I am wearing, what you saw Pat wearing, what you see some other people around here wearing, what you will see the people who are getting baptized wearing. If you would like one of these t-shirts for yourself, they are available. They'll be available in the fellowship hall after the service is over. They are $15 each, and I would say see Tammy if you know who she is. If you don't know who she is, she'll be the one back there collecting money for t-shirts right after the service. All right. So we are in the book of Judges, and with that, we are going to see the start of a story that is going to span over the next four chapters in Judges, which is crazy, because last week, we did six judges in 1 week, just nailed six judges, boom, 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 boom. Now, for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be talking about the same judge, because he has a very long, drawn out story as to how he takes Israel from where they are at this point to the point that he's going to leave it at the end of the story. So to start, I just wanted to show this little clip about a different chosen one.
The boy will not pass the council's test, master. He's too old.
Anakin will become a Jedi, I promise you.
Do not defy the council, master, not again.
I shall do what I must, Obi-Wan.
If you would just follow the code, you would be on the council. They will not go along with you this time.
You still have much to learn, my young apprentice.
A ship? A cup. A ship. A speeder.
How feel you?
Cold, sir.
Afraid, are you?
No, sir.
See through you. We can.
Be mindful of your feelings.
Your thoughts dwell on your mother.
I miss her.
Afraid to lose her, I think.
What has that got to do with anything?
Everything. Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. I sense much fear in you.
The Force is strong with him.
He is to be trained then?
No, he will not be trained.
No. He is too old.
He is the chosen one. You must see it.
Clouded this boy's future is.
I will train him then. I take Anakin as my Padawan learner.
An apprentice you have, Qui-Gon. Impossible to take out a second.
The code forbids it.
Obi-Wan is ready.
I am ready to face the trials.
Our own counsel we will keep on who is ready.
He is headstrong, and he has much to learn of the living force, but he is capable. There is little more he can learn from me.
Young Skywalker's fate will be decided later.
So if you're unfamiliar with the story of Star Wars, or Anakin Skywalker here, it starts off with a promise that this young boy will bring balance. He'll bring peace. And everyone's really excited because this young boy has so much potential to do so much good for the universe. That's really where we're going to see our main theme character for the next 4 weeks. That's where he starts today. He's going to have so much potential. But before we talk about him, let's talk about what we've seen so far in the Book of Judges. And we've been seeing basically three main themes that crop up again and again as we watch Israel run this cycle from obedience to disobedience to judgment to repentance and run that cycle again and again. So far, we've seen that the person we should want leading us in our lives, the person we should want out in front, is not any human being, not any person, but rather God himself. Israel keeps falling into this trap of wanting to put a person as their leader, to put all their trust and their faith in their judge or their leader. And that keeps failing them again and again, because even the good judges, even the ones who do a good job, well, eventually they die and they leave Israel leaderless, and it's only a matter of time before Israel falls back into sin and they start this cycle all over again. The person we should want out in front, the person we should want leading us, is the one who is not only eternally good and perfectly good in every way, shape, and form, but also eternal, the one who will not die and leave us leaderless. It's God. Second, we saw that when God gives us a command, we must obey 100%. And we've had this saying that we've been using, that 99% obedience is 100% disobedience. Because we've seen as Israel again and again through this book commits to God at about 70% or 80%, what it does is leads them into utter devastation when God was calling them to obey 100%. And we've been talking about the fact that this book is cycling downward. I've been trying to prep us for the fact that this book does not end on a high note. If you're expecting some kind of happy ending at the end of Judges where everybody gets saved and everything comes back and everything is awesome, this is not the book for you. Because this one definitely ends on a low point. And we are now headed towards that at a rapid pace. At this point, there's almost nothing good in Israel. In fact, our next section starts, like many of our sections have started up to this point, in Judges chapter 13. It says, "And the people of Israel..." Again, I feel like that one should be in capital letters. The people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. We have seen this so many times through the book. So the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. So for 40 years now, Israel has been under oppression. For 40 years, they have been without a judge, without a leader. They have been falling into sin and idolatry and doing what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So for 40 years, they are in captivity. They are being oppressed by the Philistine armies. And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the tribe of Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children. The Danites, from the tribe of Dan, is where this man is from. His name is Manoah, and he has a wife who's barren. Now, this would have been significant because value in this period of time was given to wives who bore children. It was not fair, it was not right, but their value was assessed based on whether or not they had children. So it was significant that Manoah's wife had not given him any children. This would have been something that they would have been really depressed, devastated about the fact that this had not happened. We see multiple times in Scripture different husbands and wives that are barren for most of their lives and the shame that that brings on the family. But the angel of the Lord appears to her in verse 3. And the angel of the Lord appears to the woman and says to her, "Behold, you are barren and have no children. But, you shall conceive and bear a son. Therefore, be careful to drink no wine or strong drink, and eat nothing that is unclean. For behold, you are going to conceive and bear a son. So as Manoah's wife is going through life and under this scrutiny, under this suffering through not being able to have children, an angel comes to her and says, I have good news. God has heard you in your pain. God has heard what you're going through, and he has chosen to give you a son. You are going to conceive and bear a son. So he is promising a child is coming. But he also gives her these instructions. He says, because you're going to bear a son, because God is going to do this for you, we are going to ask you to do something specific. To be careful to drink no wine or strong drink, and to eat nothing that is unclean. And this is significant for two reasons, or rather surprising for two reasons. One, wine or strong drink at this period of time would have been pretty much the only way to have pure water, or pure beverage, because most places at this period of time, you could not just go drink the water out of a well. There were some places where you could do that. So a lot of times what they would do is they would ferment grapes and add an alcohol, which would kill germs. I mean, they didn't understand the concept of germs at the time, but what that allowed them to do was not get sick as they drank fluids and stayed hydrated. So to ask them to not drink wine or strong drink meant this was going to be a bit of a hardship on them. But the second part is surprising that he points it out, because this would have been a Jewish woman. She's from the tribe, her husband's from the tribe of Dan. She's in Israel. They are living as Jewish people in the land of Israel. They shouldn't have been eating unclean things anyway. This shouldn't have been a special request. This should have just been life. This is kind of like me saying, you know what? You should eat food. Like, yeah, okay, I know that I should eat food. It should have been a no-brainer, unnecessary to say. But I think because Israel has been disobedient, because Israel has been worshiping idols, and because they have been in oppression from an outside army for 40 years, the angel has to say, oh, we got to get back to the basics here. So as you're going to have this child, you're going to bear this son, I need you to go back to following the laws that your God has set out for you. I need you to be obedient to your God. I need you to drink no wine or strong drink, but I also need you to stop eating unclean things. I need you to eat nothing that is unclean. It says, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. So this idea of a Nazarite vow, this child is going to be a Nazarite from the womb to death. And this is significant because we're going to see this play out over the next four chapters. The fact that he's a Nazarite is going to be significant in his life. So what is a Nazarite? Well, we'd have to go back to Numbers chapter 6 for that, where it says, and this is a long one, but it's 2 through 7. I cut out a section in the middle already to try to shorten it. But it says, when either a man or woman makes a special vow, the vow of a Nazarite, to separate himself to the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink. There's that again. And all the days of his separation, he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine, not even the seeds or the skins. And all the days of his vow of separation, no razor shall touch his head until the time is completed for which he separates himself to the Lord. He shall be holy. Holy here means set apart. He says, and he shall set the locks of his hair of his head. He shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow long. And all the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body. Not even for his father or for his mother, for brother or sister, if they die, shall he make himself unclean, because his separation to God is on his head. So this is describing a special vow that a person could take, where they say, I'm going to set myself apart for, and it could be any length of time. They could do it for 3 days, they could do it for 30 days, they could do it for 3 years. But they would always state on the front end, this is the length of time that I'm going to separate myself out. This is the amount of time that I am taking a Nazarite vow. We see it in a couple other places, one of the more notable ones being that Paul actually takes a Nazarite vow in the New Testament for a period of time to pray and fellowship with God. But in this case, the period of time that is set aside that this child will be a Nazarite is from the day that he is born until the day that he dies. That is determined from the get-go. His whole life is going to be a lifelong Nazirite vow. And there are the three main components that we see in the Nazirite vow. This is a checklist that we will see multiple times in the coming weeks. First, no wine. But in this case, it goes a step further. It doesn't just say no wine. It doesn't even just say no strong drink. It says no wine, no vinegar, and no grapes of any variety. Not the skins, not the seeds, nothing that has to do with grapes can be eaten during a Nazirite vow. Second, no touching a dead body. This would have already been something that would have made a person unclean. But when your family dies, you have to take care of it. You have to bury them. You have to go through that process. In which case, you would have to touch a dead body and become unclean. Not if you're under a Nazirite vow. What the Nazirite vow says is, even if your family member dies, you are not to touch a dead body. That is not allowed. And then third, you cannot cut his hair. Or she cannot cut her hair, because this is actually one of the few vows that Scripture lays out that could be for men or women. But they cannot cut their hair during this Nazirite vow. These are the three things that are required for a Nazirite vow. And we're not going to, that's not necessarily going to be as significant this week, but this is where it's laid out, that this child, as he is born, is going to have to follow these three rules for his entire life. And that's going to be significant as we move on to the other chapters 14, 15, and 16. In 13, we see, then the woman came and told her husband, a man of God came to me. And his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God. Very awesome. I did not ask him where he was from, and he did not tell me his name. But he said to me, behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. So then drink no wine or strong drink, and eat nothing that is unclean, for the child shall be a Nazirite to God from the womb to the day of his death. So Manoah's wife comes to him and tells him, hey, good news. We're going to have a kid. We're going to have a son. And God told me that he's going to be a Nazirite. And I'm not allowed to drink wine. And I'm not allowed to eat anything unclean. Because our kid's going to be a Nazirite. And Manoah is kind of like, yeah, right. Like, we have been barren for so long. What are the odds that an angel came to my wife and gave her, didn't just say that she's going to have a baby, fine, maybe we believe, but that he already knows that my kid's going to be a Nazirite from the time he's born to the time he dies, and he's giving my wife this instruction that she's not allowed to drink our wine anymore, which means we're going to have to go through all kinds of hardship to get pure water, and she's not supposed to eat anything unclean? Like, we've been doing that all along. What's the big deal? Manoah has questions. And what's cool is that Manoah responds appropriately. Manoah doesn't tell her that he doesn't believe her. Manoah doesn't, like, yeah, whatever, and go on with his life. It says, then Manoah prayed to the Lord. He goes to God and says, okay, God, if this is what you told her, great. Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come again to us and teach us what we are to do with the child that will be born. And I love verse 9 here. And God listened to the voice of Manoah. And the angel of God came again to the woman as she sat in the field. So Manoah, in his confusion, in his doubt, goes to God and says, okay, God, my wife says you came and talked to her. I really want to believe this is true. I would really like a son. But would you come tell us again? Would you come tell me what you told her? And God hears him. After a lifetime of pain, of not getting what he wanted, as he goes to God and he says, God, I would like you to show up. I would like you to tell me that you really are going to do this thing. I'm starting to have hope again. Would you come and tell me that this hope is justified? God hears him. God listens to him. And God comes again. But Manoah, her husband, wasn't with her. As it turns out, he wasn't with her in the field this time either. So the woman runs and gets him, and she says, the woman ran quickly and told her husband, behold, the man who came to me the other day has appeared to me. So Manoah rose and went after his wife and came to the man and said to him, are you the man who spoke to this woman? And he said, I am. Now, I do not know whether this I am is the formal name for God that we see multiple times when the angel of the Lord shows up, but we are going to see that this is the actual angel of the Lord. You're going to tell us that here in just a second. Because as Manoah says, and when your words come true, see that shift in trust already? Manoah has prayed to God, said, God, show me that this is going to be true. God listens to him. God comes back to have a conversation with him. And now, instead of doubting, Manoah says, when your words come true, he now believes this is going to happen. What is to be the child's manner of life? And what is his mission? What's his goal? What's his purpose? And the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, of all that I said to the woman, let her be careful. She may not eat of anything that comes from the vine. Neither let her drink wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing. All that I have commanded her, let her observe. Did you catch the weird response here? Manoah asks him, God, tell me about this child's life is going to be like. Tell me what's his mission? What's his goal? What's his purpose? What's this child? What's this son going to do for us? And God goes, tell your wife to not drink anything, but no wine, no strong drink. Don't eat any unclean thing. All the things I told her to do, do it. That's not what I asked you, God. Like, that's not the question I asked. I asked you about the kid. You're telling me about my wife. But I think what God is saying here is, look, don't worry about the kid. I'll take care of that. Do what I've called you to do. Trust me to do the part that's on me. He's like, I've made it clear, my instructions to you, obey. 100% obey the thing I've called you to do. Trust me as God to do the thing that I'm going to do. So Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, please let us detain you and prepare a young goat for you. And the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, if you detain me, I will not eat your food. But if you prepare a burnt offering, then offer it to the Lord. For Manoah did not know that he was the angel of the Lord. So Manoah's like, man, this guy has given us a great gift. He's been generous to us. We're going to have a kid. We need to provide for him. We need to prepare a meal for him. We need to show hospitality to this messenger, this prophet who's come to us. Because Manoah doesn't realize that he's actually talking to God, to the angel of the Lord. So God basically says to him, look, if you prepare food, I'm not going to eat it with you. We're not on that level. Says, but if you prepare a burnt offering, something that you should be doing as a child of God, as a part of the nation of Israel, if you prepare it as a burnt offering and offer it, that I'll accept. I'm not going to fellowship with you, Manoah, but if you worship the way you're supposed to, I will accept your worship, is what he's saying. And Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, what is your name? So that when your words come true, because Manoah's still not getting it, what is your name? So that when your words come true, again, he is believing, though, we may honor you. And the angel of the Lord said to him, why do you ask my name, seeing that it is wonderful? God's not sharing his name with him at this point, which is why I don't think that I am before is the formal name of God, because he's not speaking it to Manoah here. He's saying, why are you asking my name? My name is wonderful. He is giving Manoah more hints that he is God, not just a messenger, not just a prophet, but God himself having a conversation with Manoah. So Manoah takes the young goat with the grain offering and offers it on a rock to the Lord. He actually does what this person asks him to do, to the one who works wonders. And Manoah and his wife were watching. And when the flame went up towards the heaven from the altar, the angel of the Lord went up with the flame of the altar. Now Manoah and his wife were watching, and they fell on their faces to the ground. All of a sudden, Manoah gets it. His wife gets it. When they present this offering the way this man had told them to do, and that the smoke goes up, and all of a sudden he goes up with it, it dawns on them, this is not just a messenger. This is not just a prophet. We were just having a conversation with the Lord our God. And when he goes up, the only response they have in realizing that this man was God himself is to fall on their faces to the ground, to give the very worship that he had just invited them to give, to respond in praise and joy and celebration, except for one thing. Israel was not known to worship in joy and celebration the way we are today, because for them to meet face to face with God actually ended up bordering more on fear. It says the Lord appeared no more to Manoah and his wife, and Manoah knew that he was the angel of the Lord. And Manoah said to his wife, we shall surely die, for we have seen God. For his wife said to him, If the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted our burnt offering and a grain offering at our hands, or shown us all the things, or now announced to us such things as those. Two things we need to take away here. First, upon realizing who he was worshiping, or realizing who he was having a conversation with, Manoah has a very real, heartfelt reaction of, I'm gonna die. I have just seen the one true, perfect God. And up until this point, everything that they had known was that to see God face to face, to take our impurity and put it face to face with God's purity, was a death sentence for us. Because at this point in time, there was no Jesus to stand in between. There was no perfect lamb who died to make us right, to say, it's okay, we can fellowship. The only thing that was there at the time was judgment and death. The other big thing to take away from here is, listen to your wife. Because she makes so much more sense than him in this moment, right? She says to him, look, if God wanted us dead, we'd be dead. He wouldn't have come and given us these promises about the fact that we were going to have a kid. He wouldn't have given us commands about not drinking wine and not eating unclean things. He wouldn't have told us all this if he was just going to kill us dead. So why don't we take a breath, take a beat? He also invited us to worship him with a burnt offering and a grain offering. He wouldn't have done these things if he was just going to kill us. So it must be that there is a plan. And the woman bore a son, and they called his name Samson. Probably the most famous of the judges, Samson, is born. And the young man grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. In Machan Dan, I don't know if that's right, between Zorah and Eshtol. So Samson is the child that is born to them. Samson is the child that is prophesied to them, the chosen one who is going to grow and save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. And we're going to watch over the next 3 weeks Samson's journey as he saves Israel. But what does this all mean for us today? What's the so what here? Well, first, God hears your prayers. The same God who was there for Manoah and his wife, who heard them in their distress, who heard what they were going through, who then, it specifically tells us, God heard Manoah's prayers and came and was there with them and gave them the son. That same God who listened to them is still in power today. He is still the God of the universe today, and he listens to you. When you cry out to him, he hears you. And the neat thing about that is he doesn't just hear you and write down your request and then throw it in the recycling bin. God meets us in our pain. God is willing to come and meet us where we are at, the same way he met Manoah and his wife in their pain, in their suffering, in their struggle with not being able to bear children. God came and met them in that. And that is still true today. If you're here today and you're suffering, you're going through a hard time, I'm not saying that God is going to come and remove your pain the way he did for Manoah and his wife, give you the thing you're praying for. I am telling you that he will hear you. He knows where you're at. He can relate with you because he also went through hardship. He also went through pain. And he wants to come and be a part of that with you, to walk alongside you as you go through that, so you do not have to be alone in your pain. And when we see that, when we see God show up in the incredible ways that he does, as he meets us in our pain, as he walks through our pain with us, our struggles, as we fellowship with him, it will end up resulting in worship. Many times we have discussions about, why do we have so much music as part of worship services? Why do we praise so much? Why do we spend so much time in prayer during our Sunday services? It's because of this. It's because in good times or in bad times, as we're everything is going right, everything is going our way, or when everything around us seems to be exploding in front of our eyes and we don't see any point in it anymore, in both places, when God shows up, and we see him for who he is, and we recognize the power that he has, it should overwhelm us to the point that we have to worship, we have to praise, we have to sing. Some of our songs are happy songs, some of our sad songs are sad songs, but all of our songs talk about the greatness of our God and the power that he has in our lives. And we cry out to him in prayer and say, God, thank you so much for being here, being a part of my life. In good times and in bad, you are here with me either way. And that drives me to worship. Now, this is where we would normally end our service. And normally I would pray and we'd go back to singing. And we're going to do that here in a minute. But we've got a lot of guests here this morning. And that's awesome. So I just wanted to tell you a little bit about what's coming next. Just 2-3 quick minutes here about what's happening throughout the rest of our day. So one of the big reasons we're here today, one of the biggest celebrations that we do as a church is our baptisms. We're going to actually have 6 different people get baptized today. So I want to tell you what that is, what you're going to see. You're going to see us go over there. You're going to see us dunk some people in some water. Cool. But why? Why are we going to plunge people under the water? Why do we do it the way we do it? It's because baptism in our church is all about a public declaration. The people who are being baptized today, the people who are going to be dunked underwater, they want you to know something. They want you to know that they have come to a point in their life where they recognize that Jesus is real, that Jesus is the Son of God, and that because of our sin, we were separated from God, and that there was a rift or a chasm between us, and that the only way to fix that, to get back to a point where we can have a relationship with the God who created us in the way that he wanted us to have that relationship with him, is by saying, Jesus, I trust you. I know I can't do it myself, but I know you say that if I trust you, if I just have faith in you, you will make it right between me and God. So I have chosen to do that, Jesus. I have chosen to trust you to make things right between me and God. And they have come to a point where they want to say, and I want the people in my life to know that that is what I believe. I want the people in my life to know that that's what I believe. And because of that, I am going to choose to live my life in such a way that Jesus would be pleased with how I'm living my life. That's what baptism is. That's what we're celebrating today. That's why this is the coolest thing we can do as a church. And it is awesome that we are doing it. It's a public declaration of a just remarkable truth of what God has done for these 6 individuals and what's being offered, if you have not already accepted it, to you as well. Which is why we dunk them backwards and bring them back, because it's to simulate Jesus' death and Jesus is coming back from life, a pivotal truth in coming to believe in him. The other thing you're going to see us do, if you stick around, you are more than welcome to the business meeting. Only members get to vote, but you are more than welcome to stick around and see it. I can almost guarantee you will be different from any business meeting you've been a part of before, because I've been a part of multiple churches and none of them do it the way this church does it. And it's really kind of fun. But what membership is a point of deeper commitment. It's someone after coming to the point where they have publicly declared to their friends and family, which is why we do make baptism a requirement of membership. They are now declaring to the church, the other members of this church, that this is the place where they would like to live out that faith, that statement of faith, that belief in Jesus, where they're going to serve Jesus in the way he's called. They're saying, not only do I want to follow Jesus, but I want to follow Jesus here. We often say that anybody is welcome to attend our church. No requirements, no expectations. If you're here today, we would love it if you kept attending with us. Everyone is welcome to attend our church. What membership is the commitment to take a step farther. Membership is the point where they say, no, I am so in on this body, this group of people, that I want to commit to doing life together with them. Which what that means is they're allowed to get into my business. They're allowed to look at me and say, hey, this area of your life's not quite in line with Jesus the way you said it, you wanted it to be. Not in such a way to cut them down, but to say, you have set this goal for yourself. Let me help you meet that goal that you have set for yourself. Let's do that together. It's a point where we say, all right, I am submitting to church leadership and the fact that church leadership here has a right to set some expectations on me. And trust me, they're not hard expectations. Everyone knows what they're signing up for if they want to be a member. Things like show up and participate. Things like be a part of one of our small groups where you can do life together with other people. These basic expectations that we say, all right, if anyone can attend, doesn't have to do any of these things. But if you want to be a member, we're going to ask you to do these things. So if you stick around for our business meeting, you're going to see them tell you, actually, you're going to see that before the membership meeting because we're going to show you a video here in just a second. But we are going to vote on them based on the fact that they have said they want to be held to that standard. They want to make that commitment to this church, which is another reason why we celebrate the fact that God has brought us more family members, more people to do life with. That is stinking exciting. So what's your role? Whether you're here as a member, whether you're here as an attender, or whether you're just, this is your first time here and you only came because the person who's getting baptized invited you to hang out with them today. No matter what, your role today is to be a witness. It's to watch and to say, I was there when you made this decision. I was there in the room when you decided that you wanted the world to know that you were going to be a Jesus follower. I remember that. How's that going? I was there when you made this commitment to the church. How's that going? Your role here is to be a witness to our membership. Those who will be voting, your role is to evaluate. You're going to hear them talk about the reasons that they want to be part of us, the reasons they want to be a part of our family. It is your role as a church member to then cast your vote as to whether or not you think they are ready to be a part of our church, a member of our church. We take membership seriously. But members, it's also a chance for you to reevaluate your commitment. To say, am I at the point where I am living up to the commitment that I made to this church? Am I functioning as a member the way I said I would function as a member? And evaluate where you're at. But whether you're here today as a witness, as a member, a voter, whether you're here doing evaluation today, the biggest thing I want to call all of us to do today is celebrate. It's why we're going to have all kinds of food later. It's why we're going to clap and cheer as people are voted into membership. When you see somebody get dunked in the water and pulled back out of the water, there is no greater celebration. We should be losing our minds celebrating how awesome this is. So whatever your role today, whichever those roles you fill, the one that goes for all of us is celebration. So let's celebrate it together now. We have a quick video, and then Scott will take back over with music.
My name is Judd Yule. I've been coming to this church for approximately 5 years.
Janet Yule, and we've been coming here for probably 5 years or more.
My name is Jody Howardell, and I've been attending for about 11 months.
I'm Bob Howardell, and been here just under a year.
My name is Donna Beats, and I've been attending here about 8 or 9 years.
Eric Vandenbosch, I've been attending here since about April of 2024.
I'm Dalton. I've been here for about a year.
My name is Dylan King. I've been coming to West Middlebury for about a year.
Mostly because ever since we've come here, we've always liked the people here. Always felt welcomed, and always thought they were on a good mission.
I want to be part of the church, and I like the community that the church provides, the message that is preached here, and we just decided it was time to officially join.
I want to be a member because I want to make that commitment to the church. I enjoy the message every week and the music, and it seems like the people here are genuine and caring.
I'd like to be a part of this church family because even to date, it's been very well-received type of a family where people getting along, and it seems like a very positive family type of atmosphere. Everybody just seems united and on the same page and with the same vision. So I want to be a part of that.
Because I've been in different churches all my life and never actually was a member of a church, but I figured, well, it's about time at my age. We won't go there.
I want to be a member because I feel called to this church in a way that I've never felt called to a church before, and I feel the need to become a member to fulfill that.
I want to be part of a church family. I love it here.
The reason I want to be a member is to grow closer to Christ and to the church itself.
To be more involved, I guess. Try to provide some kind of skill. I don't know what.
Well, I've helped at things in the kitchen and been on the kitchen committee for a couple of years. I've helped with VBS and now Adventure Week. We've participated in some small groups, contributed financially, showed up on the work days.
It means being part of an extended family that supports and encourages one another.
The ability to contribute to that family, so kind of like the principle biblically of being all the body parts coming together because we all have something to contribute, so it would be a matter of being a part of that and make a contribution.
That you're a part of somebody and they're a part of you.
To be committed to the church, to be active with the church and its members, and to act as a brother with the family of the church.
To serve together and to worship together, Jesus.
To be a member is to be a body of Christ.
I just like having the idea of thinking that there are people that care what's happening in my life. And if I do need help, I know there's people I can come and see in this congregation and small groups.
Community. I hope to grow my relationship with Jesus, with God.
I don't have a list of expectations, just that we would encourage and support each other and be a unified body.
The stability, I think, and the biggest thing would be a non-compromising church, kind of like it would be great to have Jesus send a letter like he did to the Church of Philadelphia in Revelation to the church here in West Middlebury Baptist.
Just that everybody's there for you if you need them, and you call them, and they're just, we're all family. That's what families are.
I expect the same expectation that I would expect the church of me is to be with them in prayer and worship and praise to God.
To push me to be a better person, to push me to be more like Jesus.
I expect the same thing we've been since the day I walked through the doors. The sense of unity and well-being. Asking the hard questions and to grow closer to Christ.
I will try to participate in most things, not all things, but yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. All right. You feel good with that?
I'm fine.
That was perfect. One fine. Day, look at you. All right.
You know, I hope to continue to be a part of things, events and small group and worship service.
You can expect me to serve. I'm not exactly sure where yet. I'm going to start out with True North Week, helping out with that, and I will explore that further.
So on my behalf, since it's a church family made up of the multitudes of body parts, I'm going to be looking at where do I fit in and where are some of the areas. Maybe there's a weakness or something like that, and maybe I have a strength and that I can support and help this church family out and make it even better.
Always making chocolate chip cookies. Yep, being involved and doing stuff.
I expect the church to return the same with prayer and wisdom and guidance to God, to be closer to God.
Volunteering, pushing you guys to also be more like Jesus and to just loving each other.
Expect for me the same as I have been a member of Wrench Club, Flight Clubs. I'm part of the First Impression Committee and hopefully one day a trustee.